Happy Tuesday, everyone. I hope you all had a wonderful Global Rare Disease Day yesterday. It was a big day for all of us in the CDH community because congenital diaphragmatic hernia is classified as a rare disease. So I hope everyone took advantage of the opportunity to raise awareness and share your stories. And now we're back here on another Tuesday with the CDH Radio Show, and we are excited to raise more awareness today. So this week, Tracy is interviewing Jessica Cummings, and she's going to share the story of her little guy, Nathaniel.
Hi, I am here today with Jessica. Jessica, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Hi, I'm Jessica Cummings. I had a CDH son, Nathaniel, in 2011. He was diagnosed at my 18-week ultrasound. They found his stomach next to his heart. And so they took us in to meet with genetic counselors. I believe they scheduled an amnio. We went back for that and everything came back normal. So I feel like they maybe pushed us aside and said, hey, you know, he has CDH. We don't know what the survival for him will be. You can do tracheal occlusion. You can terminate. Let us know what you want to do. So I ended up doing a lot of research myself. I had found Cherubs. They were pretty much the only CDH charity that was really interested in talking with me. I found two places that I could do tracheal occlusion. We told McGee that we wanted to do that, and they said, all right, great, we'll get all of the medical records together, we'll send them out. And we weren't sure if we wanted to go to UCSF or Brown, mm-hmm. So we ended up meeting with both. We were accepted in both. We are located in Pittsburgh, so we decided we were going to go with Brown. Mm-hmm. It was more of a smaller hospital, and the people there were really nice, and it was closer to home, so we figured people could either fly out or take a train out, mm-hmm. and visit while I was out there. So we went out there. I believe I was 24 weeks. My cousin and my husband came with me because he was going to stay for the tracheal occlusion and then fly home. And my cousin was going to stay and help take care of me because you have to stay out there. And we did an ultrasound the day before the surgery was scheduled. And they found that his lung to head ratio had gone from, I believe it was a 0.2 to a 1. Mm-hmm. And a 0.2, I think, gave us like 20% chance of survival. And the lung to head ratio of 1 gave us 50%. And they don't usually accept patients with a lung to head ratio of 1 or higher because there's so many risks for the surgery. So they pretty much told us, you can't have the surgery, send us home. So we decided that we were going to stay and deliver at Pittsburgh because it's a great hospital. It's close to home. They have ECMO because we knew chances were he was going to need ECMO. So I stayed home, delivered him at McGee, and then they took him by ambulance. It's only a couple miles to Children's Hospital. And I believe his O2 levels were pretty low. So as soon as he made it to Children's, they put him on ECMO. Let's see, am I leaving anything out? I don't think so.
Did you have any pregnancy complications with him at all?
I had none with him, ironically. I have three living children, a 12-year-old son, an 8-year-old daughter, and a 4-year-old son. And their pregnancies, there was a lot of bleeding. I had, pretty much with all of them, I had hematomas. And pregnancy with Nathaniel was totally normal, other than him having CDH, which is very ironic to me.
Tell us what the day was like when he arrived.
So they had scheduled an induction for 39 weeks because they wanted to make sure maternal fetal medicine was there and all the doctors. Of course, it was a the room was full of doctors when he was delivered. Pretty much normal birth. He came out. His Apgar was score. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was actually pretty good. And I was surprised by that. So they intubated him, and I guess the tape was wet, and they ended up trying to show him to me, and they had to re-intubate him because everything came out. So I really only got to see him for a few seconds, and then they rushed him out to the NICU, where they stabilized him and then sent him by ambulance over to Children's. But yeah, the birth with him was pretty uneventful. And then they told us that they were stabilizing him, sending him by ambulance, and they told us it would probably take to get him stabilized and sent over about 2 hours before my husband would be allowed to see him in the NICU over at Children's. So that was my biggest fear there, was making sure that my husband would be able to make it over because I was stuck in McGee. So I made him leave immediately. I'm like, I don't care, go wait at Children's in case something happens, he'll have someone there. But no, he did great. He, I believe it was 10 days on his first ECMO circuit, and then it started to have clots, which I guess is pretty, 10 days is like about average for a circuit from what I know. So they decided he needed his circuit change because they tried clamping him and he was failing. His pulmonary hypertension was too high. So they ended up switching circuits, and they told us a lot of kids do terrible. So it's going to be a lot of steps backwards because you're essentially replacing their entire blood. So they have to get all of the medications back for them to be working correctly. And he actually did perfectly fine. Like there were no issues. He was able to, go from one circuit to another. They had to adjust his meds a little bit, but he did fine. And then he was on the second circuit until I think it was around 21 days. And then they said, we don't, it's not, his circuit's starting to fail. You're starting to get clots. And we debated on whether or not we should put another circuit on. And from what we were reading, if you've been on ECMO, and this is what we knew in 2011, things have probably changed now. But from what we were researching, if you're on ECMO for more than about a month, chances are you're going to have more complications. It's going to do more harm than good. So we decided, we would take him off ECMO and see what he could do. He didn't do terrible for the first few hours. And then his O2 would drop. So they would switch him to the oscillating vent, which could bring his O2 back up, but he couldn't get rid of the CO2. So then a CO2 would be too high. So they would switch him back to the normal vent, and the same, his CO2 would drop, and that, but so would his oxygen. So it was, I think, switching back and forth from the regular vent to the oscillating vent. I think we did that two or three times, and I remember at one point the nurse had to change out some medications, and we saw her just, looking sad, and we just knew, like, he's not gonna, this is, he's not gonna overcome this. So we pulled him off of the vent, and I think he lived for about 10 minutes.
He fought so hard.
He did.
What a precious boy. Was your family with you, or was it just you and your husband?
After we took him off of ECMO, I believe my husband's parents were there. My parents were there, my brother and sister, and her husband came down. So it was actually really nice that everyone
You're
was
able
back.
to love on him and say goodbye. Oh, I am so sorry.
Thanks.
This sweet boy. How were the days and the weeks after saying goodbye?
It was a little rough. We
How old was your son at the time? The one at home?
he was 22 months old, so just shy of two. Of course, he didn't understand it.
Understand.
When Nathaniel was in the hospital, we had stayed at family houses, which are like the Ronald McDonald House, but we didn't make the qualification to stay in the Ronald McDonald House. So we stayed at the family houses, which were local. I believe we stayed at the one in Shadyside. So we just drove over. So we stayed at the family houses. We stayed at the one in Shadyside, which is a couple miles away. And then every morning we drove out for rounds. And I believe they started at 8, and they always started with the sickest kid. So obviously anyone on ECMO. So I think there may have been one other child on ECMO while we were there. They came on later. And it was a little girl. Okay, go ahead, go. So we would come over so that we could be there for rounds and talk about, hear them talk about what their plan was for Nathaniel every day. Dom, like I said, was almost two. He was staying with my parents, so every other day they would come down to the hospital, bring him down, see Nathaniel. And Dom thought it was the greatest thing because there was all kinds of, they have fish tanks and trains and stuff at children. So he thought it was fun. He didn't understand. And we would take him in to see his brother, and he didn't really understand. He would, I remember him saying, "Oh, we done? Okay." Things like baby sleeping.
I'm
Yeah,
not done.
you're not done? Okay.
I'm just getting
What are you getting?
something.
A drink. Okay, go ahead, get your drink.
My dishes.
Okay.
It's fine. They're cute kids.
Thank you. Thank you. They're crazy and very inquisitive.
Oh.
Lost my train of thought. So we would be there for rounds in the morning to go over what their plan was for him. And it was actually kind of funny because a lot of the doctors were pushing for him to have his repair surgery, but a lot of the surgeons were pushing. They wanted him more stabilized. There is a straw.
But they attached to
No, it's not attached to it. There it is. So the surgeons wanted him to be off ECMO, of course, because of bleeding risks. But a lot of the doctors, the NICU doctors, wanted him to have the surgery. So it was almost like not a battle, but you know, everybody, learned that in medicine, that everybody has their own opinion of the right way to do it, which changes. But I mean, that's science and research, and
Right, so he never did have his
he
CDH
never did.
repair.
No,
Never did.
no.
So you have been with us for many years, volunteering different positions within the charity. How important is it for you to still continue to raise CDH awareness and give back?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
How important is it to continue to give back and to continue to raise CDH awareness?
I love it, and I did so many fundraisers. I did painting parties, and I threw a dinner dance, and I think it is awesome to get money to CDH research, because there, since so much what wasn't known about it, and we're just now, it's now looking more important. Not that it wasn't, it's always been very important. But now I think a lot of, I say labs because I work in a lab, but I think a lot of people are now saying this is something that does happen pretty frequently and we know nothing about it. But I really, because my kids have gotten older and the 12-year-old is in Scouts, he loves it. The 8-year-old is in gymnastics, and we just started competition, so that has taken up a lot of time. 4-year-old just started preschool, so it has been crazy, and I haven't been able, like, I'm just trying to figure out how we function daily, and I find it funny because I remember when I was younger and my parents would always complain about all the chauffeuring they had to do, and I was just like, oh, Mom, Dad, you're just lazy. I'm just like, no, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
So I wish that I could actually do more now, but I'm trying.
You're doing wonderful, and we appreciate you.
Oh,
and there'll
you.
Be that day when the kids are gone and you want
right?
something to do. We are here for you. We're here, and you always have a place. We always appreciate you raising awareness and Nathaniel's memory and keeping that little boy's memory alive. Do you guys do special things on his birthday?
We usually just go out to dinner, and we'll go to the cemetery before, and then go out to dinner, and we baked a cake because my kids really wanted to bake a birthday cake, and I'm not a big baker, but they were excited about it and put there were a lot of sprinkles and we usually do what are those things, the little Chinese lanterns, I think they're called. We release those, and
that's precious. So what advice would you give to a CDH family that's just beginning their journey with CDH and getting that diagnosis?
Oh my. Well, I would say you have to do a lot of pushing for what you think is best in your situation, because I don't think there's going to be, there's not a perfect plan, because CGH is, there's so much unknown about it. And while we do have some hospitals swear that, oh, we're the best CDH hospital, and others don't really know anything about CDH, I think you have to factor a lot of things into it. You need family support. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't travel, because you should. There are really are a lot of really good hospitals that know about CDH, but you need your family and your friends there, and even other CDH parents that have been there. And sadly, you have to prepare for every single possible option, because there's going to be a lot of things that are thrown at you that you weren't expecting. Both good and bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some crazy things that happen, and I know a lot of, not personally, but I've been in contact with a lot of CDH parents who were pretty much told their child wasn't going to make it, like running around, crazy kid now. But sadly, not all of them make it, so you have to prepare for that too.
Thank you.
Be ready to expect the unexpected. I don't know.
Yep, that's very true in this journey. It's just a roller coaster of a ride for sure.
It's crazy.
Jessica, I can't thank you enough for sitting down with me today and sharing more about Nathaniel and his life. And I appreciate you more than anything for being on our volunteer team and continuing to give back.
Thank you.
Jessica, thank you so much for sharing Nathaniel's story, for all you do at the charity, for all the volunteering you've done over the years, and for letting us be a part of your family's journey with CDH. We appreciate you. And Tracy, we always appreciate you. And we appreciate you, our listeners, for tuning in every week to the CDH Radio Show. If you would like to share your story, please visit www.cdhi.org/share-your-story. And we can share your story right here on the CDH Radio Show on the telethon coming up on April 19th. Also on all of our social media, our blogs, and everywhere we possibly can. Because the only way we are ever going to defeat congenital diaphragmatic hernia is through research and awareness. And without awareness, there will be no research. So please share your stories. Allow us to use our platform to share your stories and to get the word out. Because every one of these children matter and every story needs to be heard. Thank you all for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you again next week. This is Dawn Ireland from CDH International. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
This is my fight song. Take back my life.